The Israelites were now living in exile in Babylon, far away from home. The Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar selected a group of the most healthy, educated Israelite men to study the Babylonian language and culture for 3 years, then put them to work in his royal court. In this group, there were three men named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They served the king faithfully, and the king placed them in powerful positions. Nebuchadnezzar wanted his people to worship him, so he built a 90-foot-tall gold statue of himself and commanded everyone in Babylon to worship it. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had committed themselves to only worshiping God. So when everyone else in Babylon bowed and worshiped to the statue, the three men stayed standing. Nebuchadnezzar was furious and sentenced them to be thrown into a fiery furnace and burned alive. The king ordered the furnace to be turned up to 7 times hotter than usual, so hot that even the guards who threw them into it were killed. Once the three men were inside, the king jumped up and asked his advisors, "Weren't there 3 men we threw in? I now see 4 men, and the 4th looks like a son of the gods." The king ordered the men to come out. When they did, everyone was amazed. Not only were they still alive, but they were in perfect condition. Not a hair on their heads had been burned. Once again, the king was impressed, and not only let the men go, but promoted them. Years later, a new king of Babylon named Darius came on the scene. A friend of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego named Daniel, who was also an Israelite, was so well liked by the new king that the other leaders in Babylon became jealous and hatched a plot to get rid of him. They tricked King Darius into signing a law that said Darius himself was a god and should be the only god anyone should worship for the next 30 days. Daniel heard about the law, but chose not to follow it. He went into an upstairs room in his home and looked out the windows facing toward Jerusalem, and he prayed to God 3 times a day. When the Babylonian leaders saw Daniel praying, they told King Darius, who was now forced to punish Daniel. He was arrested and thrown into a den full of lions overnight. In the morning, the den was opened, and Daniel was not only alive, there was not a scratch on him. Years later, after the Israelites had all been living in exile for 70 years, the Babylonians were overtaken by Persia, and the Israelites were allowed to return back to Jerusalem. They were going home.
Well, good morning. So the Got Leadership t-shirts and the vignettes about the leadership summit and what Pastor Rich said, of course, you know that we're going to be talking about leadership this morning. And I feel like at the end of this sermon, I will have done my job if, one, you are prayerfully considering signing up for the Global Leadership Summit, but two, if you recognize that God has given you a position of influence in whatever circles you run in that could be leveraged in terms of leadership for the advancement of God's kingdom in this world. So we're starting a new series this morning called Leverage. And we're gonna be looking at the story of Daniel, and you saw the video that describes some of the things that happened later in his life, but we'll be looking at where it all began at the beginning of the book of Daniel in Daniel 1. And as we talk about leadership, I just want you to know that leadership is one of the core values in the life of our church. If you were to go to our website and see our statement on our core values, there are 5 core values, but Christ-centered leadership is one of them, and you'd find these words. We believe that Christ modeled servant leadership and demonstrated a timeless approach to leadership development. If you look at what Jesus did, he was a humble servant leader. Everyone knew he was in charge of those that he had recruited to follow him, but we see a story of him even bowing to wash their feet at one point, humbling himself, modeling servant leadership. And we believe that if you look at Christ's example, you see everything that you need to understand what leadership and leadership development is all about. Christ was clear on his purpose, came to seek and save that which was lost, and he helped his followers understand that vision and live it out. And so what we've said as a church is we believe that God has given us a clear vision to be a diverse community where people experience authentic relationships and find hope and freedom in Jesus Christ through our unconditional love, our selfless serving, and the passionate cultivation of life change. And we believe that that vision is clear and it will spread to the extent that we raise up leaders that not only live out the vision, but also help other people live out the vision. And so the Global Leadership Summit is a catalytic piece of that, and we want to challenge you to prayerfully consider it. You know, as you think about me preaching this message this morning, I just want to tell you the other night, Friday, I was at the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport with Pastor Brent, Pastor Santees, and Leo, one of the worship leaders. And we were at a meeting in Texas, and we were on our way back. We stopped at Friday's restaurant in the airport. And the server came up, and as I often do, I struck up a conversation with her, and I ended up asking her. I looked at Brent, and I said, "What do you think he does for a living?" So she looked at Pastor Brent. She said, "Okay, I'll play this game." And she said, "You know, you look like you're in the music industry." And I thought, wow, you know, Pastor Brent is our worship arts pastor. And so Brent looked at me and said, "Well, what do you think he does for a living?" She looked at me and she said, "You know what? You look like you're in sales." I said, "Interesting you would say that." And we didn't reveal it yet. She looked at Santees and looked at Leo. She couldn't quite figure out what they did. She said, "You know, you guys look like businessmen." So we revealed what we did. And, you know, the rest of the conversation is a whole nother sermon for some other day. But sales, I thought, you know, I told her, I said, that's kind of interesting you would say that, because I do sit in a position as a pastor of a church where I try and persuade people of their need to follow Christ and also go deeper in their relationship with him. And today, I'm hoping to persuade you to think about the circle of influence that God has given you and how you can best leverage that with respect to leadership. So I'm going to pray, and then we'll dive into the book of Daniel. Would you join me in prayer? Heavenly Father, thank you so much for another opportunity to be gathered in this place to dive into your word together. And Lord, I'm asking that you would speak powerfully by your Holy Spirit. Lord, you know that I personally am getting over a cold, and I just need your help with my voice. But Lord, I ask that you would be the mouthpiece this morning, that you would use me as a vessel, that you would speak through me, Lord, speak to me, and speak to all of our hearts. And help us, God, to just embrace the truths that are in these texts. And I pray, Lord, that we wouldn't just be hearers, but we would be doers of your word as well. It's in the name of Jesus that I pray. Amen. So, the title of the message is The Leadership Fulcrum. We're going to be in Daniel 1. And I've got this board up here that I'll use to help me illustrate this. And I'm going to set it over this black thing here. And how many of you right now, you're having visions of running up here and hopping on a seesaw? You remember from your childhood days. Wait, before I even ask that, how many of you caught this type of apparatus a seesaw when you were a child? Raise your hand if you caught it a seesaw. Few of you. How many of you caught it a teeter-totter? Raise your hand. Wow. It must be a West Michigan thing. Last night there was like two seesaws and the rest were teeter-totters. How many of you have no idea what this is because you never had a seesaw or a teeter-totter? You know, it's funny, when I was with Leo and Santees and Brandt the other day, Leo's from Brazil, and we were talking. I said, "Who called it a seesaw, Santees?" And I said, "Who called it a teeter-totter?" Brandt said, "Well, I kind of called it both." I looked at Leo, he's like, "I have no idea what you're talking about. We didn't have those as a kid." Well, I have this up here, and if you know anything about this kind of apparatus in physics, this black thing here would be called the fulcrum. It's the center. Everything rests on the fulcrum. It doesn't have to be at the center, but because I have a fulcrum there, if I had weights on the other side of that board that I needed to lift, I would have leverage because of the fulcrum. And as we talk about leadership, we need to understand, well, what's the fulcrum of our leadership? And I think the book of Daniel gives us some insight on that. So Daniel 1, just to remind you, last week when we left off, we are in the story. The story is a 31-chapter book by Zondervan that summarizes the Bible. I think we're in chapter 18 this week, if you're reading along. And it tells the story of Daniel in there. And in this part of the story, Nebuchadnezzar had come in, routed the people of Judah, snatched people away from Jerusalem, basically beat them down. God allowed his children to catch a beat down because of their persistent disobedience. persistently disobeyed God. They rebelled against God. And so ultimately, when Nebuchadnezzar came in, he took the leaders, the nobility, the royal family, the craftsmen, the military leaders. He took all of the leaders away into exile in Babylon. And so when we get to Daniel, Daniel is a story of a young man and several of his friends that were in exile in Babylon. Look at how verse 3 begins. It says, "Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians, and the king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table, and they were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service." So the king in this passage is Nebuchadnezzar. He's the king of Babylon, and he is on a mission to raise up the next generation of people to be of service to the king. Now remember, everyone in the royal family and in the leadership had been pulled away in exile, and he sent his court official to go amongst the exiles and find the people that he would train to be leaders. Now I want you to watch his selection process. Because as you look at his selection process, there's a truth that comes out that we should all be aware of. And that truth is this, that the way God selects leaders is often different than the way the world selects leaders. Look at what Nebuchadnezzar wanted to do. It tells us that he wanted the good-looking people. He wanted the people with high potential. God often chooses leaders in a different way than what the world goes about choosing leaders. And I think there's a debate that goes on in the world, like, are you born a leader or can leadership be developed within you? Well, if you base your understanding of leadership development solely on Nebuchadnezzar's example, then you'd begin to think that maybe you aren't qualified for leadership. Think about it for a moment. Nebuchadnezzar says, give me the best looking, give me the smartest, give me the ones with the highest potential, give me the ones that are quick to learn and quick to understand. And so God seems to say, I can use anyone and everyone. Like, I'll take the ones with the 1.5 GPA, the ones with the pimples all over their face, the ones that root for the wrong college football teams. God can use you. But even deeper than that, the ones whose marriages seem like they're in trouble right now, the ones who are sick, the ones who are broken, the ones who are victimized and traumatized, I can use anyone. You see, leadership has never been about positions or titles, but leadership is all about recognizing that you have influence. Now, some of you may be saying, Kyle, you don't know what I'm carrying. You don't know what I walked in with this morning. You don't know what I'm going through. How can you be talking to me about leadership when I feel like I am at the bottom of the barrel right now? I want you to think about Daniel for a moment. Daniel had everything ripped from him, everything that was familiar, as he was dragged away into exile. And the time that these young men are chosen, they were most likely about 14 to 15 years old. And they had been pulled away from their homeland, from their families, from everything that was familiar. It was a sense of despair. And they could have very easily said, forget God, forget all of this. Yeah, the king wants us to serve him? Gladly. You know what? We'll go and serve him because God clearly has abandoned us. And some of you may feel that way. You talk about leadership to advance God's kingdom. Why should I do that when God has forgotten about me? I just want you to know that in this text, Daniel may have felt that God had forgotten about him. And so it'll be interesting to see how he responds to the selection process. But I just want you to know, God can use anyone. So if you're sitting here and you've already made it up in your mind that, you know what, the leadership summit, if that's one of the outcomes of this, that I would sign up for that, you can forget that because God can't use me. No, God can use anyone and everyone to be a leader. If you have influence, if you're a single mom, you got influence over kids that are watching you. If you're a dad, you got influence over kids that are watching you. If you're a husband, you have influence over at least a spouse and vice versa if you're a wife. If you're a school teacher, if you're a business leader, everyone has influence over someone. And so it's a matter of understanding that influence and leveraging it. So Christ-centered leadership We said it's a core value. And the Global Leadership Summit then is this catalytic event where we try and pour into people and help them grow and develop and really fuel that leadership value. It happens every year in August. For 14 years, we've hosted it. And in your family news, there's a way to sign up for it. And I just want to challenge you to think about it for a moment. You know, why wouldn't I go to a two-day world-class leadership development event for such a low price? I mean, if you're a Christian that has leadership influence, why wouldn't you want to go and be equipped? Some people might say, well, isn't that just for pastors, or isn't that just for people with positional leadership? No, it's for everyone. Most of you know about the amazing gift we received to launch the Wyoming campus, $1.6 million back in February. Well, that was an awesome gift, and we celebrated that, but I don't want you to miss the footnote to that story. You remember when the couple came to meet with me to tell me about this gift, and the wife said, you know, I just need you to know I attended the leadership summit last year. And at the end of the last talk, Pastor Bill Hybels passed out a prayer card. And on that prayer card, it just had a daily prayer for the local church to be the hope of the world, to live out its full potential, where people would come and bring their best, their gift, their talent, their time, their treasure. And she said, Kyle, I've been praying that prayer every day since August. And I feel like this financial gift is just the next step in obedience to the Lord. See, we can celebrate the $1.6 million, but we don't necessarily remember that she was on her knees every day praying, God, how do you want to best use me? And ultimately, when the opportunity came to give, she gave. She was inspired by the leadership summit. I'm challenging you to come, and I want you to be inspired by that global leadership summit. And you might say, well, wait a second. Why are we talking about leadership conferences in the midst of the story of Daniel? Like, what does that have to do with the word? Well, I want to point something out to you in this text. Nebuchadnezzar had a strategy for developing leaders. He had a systematic approach to leadership development. The text says that he asked for the best and the brightest, and he was going to pour into them for 3 years. He wanted them to learn the language and the literature of the Babylonians. Nebuchadnezzar had a systematic leadership development strategy. And I look at that and I say, man, why does it seem that it plays out that way in our world? Where oftentimes the world has better systems for developing leaders than the church does. And just think about it for a moment. Some of you work for businesses where they've got you on an employee development plan. They know what classes they want you to take over a several-year period to grow and develop. Or some of you have been in community leadership programs where there's a systematic approach to developing leaders. But what about in the life of the church? Like, what about in your own personal life? Do you have a systematic plan to grow and develop? I know I went through Leadership Grand Rapids a few years ago, and it was a great experience. I networked with people from all different sectors of the community, and the whole purpose of that was to raise up people that would see themselves as stakeholders in the Grand Rapids community. The desire was to make this a great community. And I sat in that experience, and I said, do we have anything like that in the life of the church? Something that would systematically develop leaders that would see themselves as stakeholders in the church, in their local church, where they would say, I want to make a change. I want my church to be great. Nebuchadnezzar had a systematic approach to leadership development, and we read through it and we may run right past it, but we shouldn't, because I think it's still true today that the world often develops leaders more systematically than the church does, and if that continues to happen, the church ultimately won't survive. And so the Leadership Summit is just part of our systematic approach to developing leaders. God has given us, the church, a big assignment to bring transformation to the world. God has given us a huge assignment to take the message of Christ to those that are lost. We need leaders that not only understand that vision and live it out, but also equip other people to live it out as well. Let's continue on in the text, verses 6-7. It says, among these were some from Judah. These are the people who were selected. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. The chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, the name Belteshazzar. To Hananiah, Shadrach. To Mishael, Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. So Daniel and his companions were selected amongst others, and they were given new names right off the bat. And it's interesting because in Scripture, oftentimes, a name change will be a reflection of, or a predictor of a life purpose or a passion area that God has for someone. And so we see it often in Scripture. Simon becomes Peter, the rock on which the church will be built. Saul becomes Paul. Abram becomes Abraham, father of many nations. And Sarai becomes Sarah. In this case, the king Nebuchadnezzar changes these young men's names. Daniel's name meant God is my judge, and his name gets changed to something that means protect his life. But Nebuchadnezzar isn't talking about God protecting his life. He's talking about Baal, one of their false gods, protecting Daniel's life. Hananiah was Yahweh is gracious, and his name is changed to command of Aku. And Mishael, his name meant who is what God is. Like, what kind of God do we have that there's no other God like our God? And his name gets changed to who is what Aku is, one of the Babylonian gods. And Azariah's name meant Yahweh has helped. And his name gets changed to servant of Nebo. Can you imagine what it would be like to have everything stripped from you and then even your name taken from you? Where names meant purpose, where names had meaning, and yet in this new culture, they're given totally new names that tie into the system of gods in Babylon. Daniel has this name, God is my judge. He lived his whole life to that point, knowing his name meant God is my judge, and then his name gets changed. I'm so thankful that Daniel didn't hold on too tightly to his name because he understood his purpose. He could have ended it all right there and just fought. No, you can't change my name. My name is Daniel. But no, he understood what his purpose was. What the world wants to call you is never more important than what God has created you to do. Let me say it again. Your life purpose is far more important than whatever name the world or the culture or anyone else wants to assign to you. And the issue is, do you understand your purpose in life? Daniel understood his purpose, so the name change didn't matter. Look at what it says. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, I'm afraid of my lord the king who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. It says, but Daniel resolved. Daniel was clear on who he was. Daniel resolved not to defile himself. Have you resolved to do anything? It's like Daniel decided in advance what he was going to do and what he was not going to do. And it didn't matter what the circumstances were. He was going to stay committed to his resolve because he knew that God was his judge. And so he said, it doesn't matter, you know, what the king is providing. The king wanted to provide the best food, the best nutrients. But Daniel knew some things about that food. Daniel knew that it might have been offered to false gods in worship. He knew it might not have been prepared properly, and he would have been ceremonially unclean if the blood hadn't been drained off. He knew that even the type of meat that they would serve might have been from unclean animals. And so he decided, he was resolved that in captivity, where no one else might know, he would still follow God. A deep devotion to God is a leader's greatest asset. Daniel was clear on the fulcrum of leadership influence in his life. You know, some people get it mixed up sometimes. Some people think, you know what, the center of my leadership influence is all about success. Right? If I can be successful in business, successful in my family, success, 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 and keep rising to new heights, then people will see and I'll get opportunities to leverage my influence for the Lord in the world. Other people say, you know what? If I just go to church regularly, that'll be the center of my leadership influence. People will see that I am a faith-filled person because every Sunday you can count on me being there, Pastor. And in church, that's where I'll best leverage my leadership influence. Some people would say it's all about looking good. It's all about appearance. If I can look good, keep my hair cut, my clothes ironed, shoes shined, and look the part, then that'll be the vehicle to leadership
influence and I'll leverage it in the world. And some people would say, I'll just volunteer for everything. I'll just serve like crazy. Doesn't matter what's going on in my own personal spiritual life. I'll just serve and volunteer for everything that comes up and people will know and I'll be able to leverage my influence. And for some people it's worked. You ask them how they're doing. They'll never tell you personally how their family is doing or how they're doing in terms of the relationship with God. It'll always be a work example. It'll always be about how the business is going, how the job is going, and work becomes the center. But for Daniel, and what I hope for you, is that we recognize that everything rests upon God. Daniel's deep devotion to God allowed him to resolve in advance that he would not defile himself by the ways of the world. Daniel understood that his leadership influence would best be leveraged if he kept God at the center. And so even though he was offered all of the trappings of the world, Daniel said, no, can I just have a separate diet so that I don't partake of everything that the world is partaking in? And it's interesting that the guard was concerned. The guard was concerned. The chief official was concerned. Wait a second. If you do that, you'll be worse off than everyone else. I don't know if you've ever encountered that, where people would think, you know what, if you follow God wholeheartedly, you're not going to have as much fun as us in life. Like, if you follow God wholeheartedly, your life isn't going to be as fulfilling as it could be. And Daniel says, no, I'm devoted to God, even if it means that I don't do everything that everyone else is doing. And so when you look at how it plays out, verse 11, Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. And so he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. And so the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. Daniel was willing to take a challenge in order to demonstrate God's provision in his life. He said, just 10 days. I know you're concerned that we're going to be looking worse off, but just 10 days, try it out. Try us out with just vegetables and water and see that we don't look better than those that are eating the king's meat and the royal food from the king's table. And in that challenge, we see that a guard goes from hesitant to helpful. Right? This guard goes from skeptical to supportive. The guard sees that after 10 days, Daniel and his companions look better. Not just the same, they look better than those that are around them. Now we know the implications of this. People have come up with the Daniel fast and other things that are healthy ways of eating. And those things have ministered to many people in our congregation. But as you sit here this morning and you think about Daniel's 10-day challenge, I got to ask you, what would be the 10-day challenge for you? You know, what's that area of your life that so consumes you that you just need to try giving it up for 10 days and seeing God's provision in your life? I think of some young people that are always texting. What would it be like to give up a cell phone for 10 days? Or some people that are always Facebooking. 10 days off of Facebook. For some of you, it may be eating. For some of you, it may be alcohol. For some of you, it may be some other issue in your life. What is it? Only you and God know what it is. And for 10 days, Daniel gave it up. And over those 10 days, he saw God provide in amazing ways such that it was a powerful witness to the world around him. What would it be that if people saw you give it up for 10 days, they would say, what are you doing? Are you crazy? You can't give that up. And then at the end of those 10 days, they say, wow. Man, look at what God has done in your life. You have anything that you can think of? But sometimes just taking the challenge is where we open ourselves up to a greater intimacy with God, a greater understanding of who really needs to be at the center of our lives. Later on this summer, July 1st, we're going to begin a 60-day tithing challenge. We've done these before, 90-day tithing challenges, and people have been blessed by these opportunities for the first time in their lives just to try tithing.
So we're saying there'll be more information to come. You'll be able to gather information at KCC Central soon. But think about it. For 60 days, if you've never tithed before, you've heard us talking about it. You've seen us celebrating it. But maybe you sat there and you thought, I could never do that. Just try it. 60 days. Whatever that gross income is, take 10%, give it back to the life of the local church, and then just watch what God does. Now, the danger in me saying that is, at the end of 60 days, you say, Pastor, God didn't do anything. I want my money back. You don't give just to get from God. But I've heard testimony after testimony after testimony of people that say, you know what, I'll try it. Yeah, it means making some adjustments. It means giving up some Starbucks. It means giving up eating out. Or it may mean giving up some other thing that's been on my radar. It's super important for this summer. It may mean walking somewhere instead of driving when gas is $4.23 a gallon. We should stop and pray right now about gas prices. Oh, man. But I've heard testimony after testimony of people that said, I did it, and I couldn't believe how God provided. I tried to outgive God, and I couldn't do it. Daniel took a challenge for 10 days, and the witness to the world was more powerful than anything that Daniel could have said or done. And the reason Daniel did that is because he understood his leadership leverage. He understood who was at the center. The fulcrum of his leadership was God. That's all that mattered, and that's the way that Daniel lived. And so when you read what came as a result of that, verse 17 says, to these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and language. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. And at the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And so they entered the king's service, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. The great joy of leadership is the fruit that comes from walking in obedience to God. We don't talk about leadership just for the sake of leadership. We talk about leadership for the sake of understanding that when we walk obediently to God, leveraging the leadership influence that God has given us, there is blessing that comes from that obedient surrender. Daniel was blessed with special gifts. Dream interpretation in that culture was golden. It was one of the best gifts available, especially when you look at the rest of the story and how it plays out and the way Nebuchadnezzar had his dreams. He was blessed with long life. That's why the time stamp is there when we're told he was still alive when Darius came in as king. And so Daniel had this long life, these great gifts. His companions, you know the rest of the story. Daniel's thrown into a lion's den at one point, and he survives. His companions are thrown into a fiery furnace, and they survive. And there's something about walking in humble obedience to God and understanding that whatever circle you're in, even if you're an exile, even if you're far away from home, even if everything has been stripped from you, to still walk in obedience to God produces great fruit and great blessing.